And we're happy to have Walt Meyer on the program tonight. He's a research scientist for the National Snow and Ice Data Center. Walt, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. It seems this year that we've, and I'm sure most folks out there have heard about it, we've experienced the largest loss of Arctic ice on record, record low Arctic ice. However, it seems like just the opposite is happening down in Antarctica, and it's often cited by global warming doubters. What's going on with that, with the opposite happening down that you would think is kind of counterintuitive down in Antarctica?
Right. Well, the seasons are reversed, so as we hit the minimum for the year in the Arctic, we tend to hit the maximum for the Antarctic right around that year, or right around the same time of year. And as you said, we had a record minimum in the Arctic, and coincidentally, really, is we had a record maximum for the Antarctic. And the Antarctic is a very different place from the Arctic. They're, no pun intended, polar opposites, really. And even though they're both snow and ice covered and they're at opposite ends of the Earth, they're very different environments. The Arctic is an ocean surrounded by land on all sides, whereas the Antarctic is a continent surrounded by an ocean. And in the Antarctic, you have the ice grows out from that continent northward. It goes into a kind of a big circle surrounding the continent, hundreds of miles out, even thousands of miles out from the coastline. And it moves around with the winds and the currents, and there's very strong winds and currents that circle Antarctica because there's no impediment to those winds and those currents. There's no land masses that connect to Antarctica. So they can kind of whip around. And what happens is that the winds, as they whip around, they push the ice around from the west to the east, but they also push it a little bit northward. And that helps the ice grow outward. And so when you have a little bit more ice than normal, what typically the reason is because the winds are a little bit stronger, pushing things out. And we've seen an increasing trend, actually, in those winds over the last 30-plus years of our satellite record. And that's due to a couple things. One, we've seen the globe as a whole warming, so farther towards the equator. Well, the Antarctic has been warming in some areas, but overall, it's still a very cold place. And that gradient between the cold and the hot has helped the winds speed up. Another aspect is that the ozone hole, which people are probably familiar with, that's way up in the upper atmosphere. But because that ozone hole exists, the winds at the high atmosphere whip around faster, and those kind of spin down and cause the surface winds to go faster. So effectively, the Antarctic is really dominated by how the winds are blowing, and they've been blowing in a favorable way to have higher ice extents. And this year, it happens to be a record high, although I would emphasize that we're talking very different magnitudes. The Arctic has lost half of its summer ice cover, where the Antarctic is a few percent higher than what it normally is. Roughly the size of the state of Texas higher than what it normally is, this record high in the Antarctic, while the Arctic is down about two Alaskas worth of surface area covered.
Walt, does that ozone hole, does that allow heat to escape then too?
It's not really, it does keep things, it does make the upper atmosphere cooler, but it's not really directly related to what we talk about, greenhouse gases and the greenhouse effect. It's a different process. It's more of a chemical process in terms of the ozone and ultraviolet radiation in particular, but it does have an effect on the winds.
Now, what causes the ozone? Now, that ozone hole is a very large feature.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's a large feature. And it's due to CFCs, chlorofluorocarbons, that came out of spray aerosol cans, which we've now, have been banned, and there's not very much of that around. But what happens, those chemicals that get up into the high atmosphere essentially react with the ozone, and eats away at the ozone. And unfortunately, those tend to stay up there for a long time. So even though we've ceased emitting those CFCs, the ozone hole is still exists and will probably exist for a few decades to come, although it should recover over time. And it's really just the chemical reaction, and particularly at the cold temperatures high up over the Antarctic.
Now, Does that exist only over the Antarctic, or does it the ozone hole? It seems to me there's a relationship there in Australia and sun exposure too, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean it's centered over the Antarctic, but it does spread outward, and it's not necessarily a perfect circle. It can have some blobs to it, and sometimes those can extend up into like Australia, and so allowing more UV radiation, which can cause issues with skin cancer and so forth. And so it does affect areas there. There also is occasionally an ozone hole in the Arctic. But it hasn't been as prevalent, partly because the Arctic is a bit warmer than the Antarctic. The Antarctic is actually colder overall, and the colder temperatures help the chemical reactions.
Just how large is that ice pan that we're talking about? I mean, it sounds like it's just huge.
In terms of the loss of ice in the Arctic?
No, how large is that Antarctic ice pan? You know, he said it's been growing slightly every year. How big a feature is it?
Well, when it reaches its maximum, it's about 18 to 19 million square kilometers, about 6 million square miles, and that's roughly the size of 2.5 of the lower 48 United States.
Wow.
And like I said, this year we were up about a Texas on 2.5 United States. Overall, we've had a trend of about a Connecticut per year, a pretty small trend. Noticeable, but not very large, whereas in the Arctic, like you said, we're down about 2 Alaskas this year, and we have a trend that's losing in Indiana every year. And so there's a big difference in scale there between the two changes.
How does that, you know, we hear a lot about the loss of ice in the Arctic and how that affects not only our weather, of course, but also the weather affecting things like sea rise and also the ice in Greenland melting, affecting so many things. How does that that huge pan of ice down in Antarctica, how does that affect the rest of the globe?
It has less of an effect than the Arctic does, certainly, because we have those strong winds and currents. It kind of isolates Antarctica from the rest of the globe. There's not as much communication between that. There's not as much transfer of heat and energy between them, whereas the Arctic, there's a lot of north-south. Everyone's familiar with the Arctic cold fronts that come down in the wintertime, and you know, that's the Arctic masses. You don't get that as much in the Antarctic. That cold tends to stay there. So the ice cover is not as prevalent. The other thing is that the Antarctic, even though it has a lot of ice during the wintertime, it's dark down there, and it's cold. And in the summertime, when the sun comes out, the ice melts away very quickly because it's quite thin. It's on the order of maybe 3 feet thick, maybe a little bit more, but generally most of the ice is 3 feet or less thick. And so it melts away very quickly, whereas in the Arctic, we had a lot of thick ice, a lot of ice that was like 10 to 13 feet thick over much of the Arctic Ocean within the Arctic around the North Pole. And one of the big changes we've seen, in addition to losing the surface area, is that the ice is thinning really dramatically. Now it's becoming more dominated by that by ice that's on the order of 3 to 5 feet thick. And what that means is that a lot of that ice stays around. The Arctic generally would keep about half of its ice cover, and that ice reflects energy from the sun and helps keep things cool. It acts like an air conditioner for the climate and keeps the Arctic cooler. Whereas in the Antarctic, as I said, the ice almost completely disappears, so there's not as much of that cooling effect from the sea ice there.
We're speaking with Walt Meyer, and Walt is a research scientist for the National Snow and Ice Data Center. I have to be honest, Walt, that I didn't realize we had a National Snow and Ice Data Center. Can you fill us in a little bit about that organization and what you folks do?
Sure. Yeah, we're affiliated with the University of Colorado here. But we basically operate under grants from federal agencies, particularly NASA, as well as the National Science Foundation and NOAA. And one of the major things we actually do is, as our name implies, we're a data center. We actually archive a lot of data sets for the cryosphere, for the snow and ice covered regions, particularly from NASA satellites. We have many terabytes of data that we archive and distribute. Users can come and get whatever data they want. But we also have a very active research component, of which I'm a member. Using the data and looking at the changes in the Arctic and investigating those changes and the impacts of those changes on the climate, on people, on the wildlife, and basically trying to learn more about what's going on with Arctic climate and Antarctic climate and how it's affecting the globe.
You know, one of our Arctic explorers, Lonnie Dupree, hails from Grand Marais, where we're located as well in Minnesota.
Yeah, I've met Lonnie. Okay. We've worked with him a little bit on some of his expeditions.
Yeah, I think in 2006, maybe, when he was in the Arctic, I believe that he was contributing and kind of a hands-on rather than internet type of research.
Right. Yeah, he collected some data for us, and which was very nice and very useful. Yeah.
Now, I want to know, as a scientist for the National Snow and Ice Data Center, how much influence do you have on our own snowfall here?
Unfortunately, we don't have a whole lot of influence. We collect the data and observe it. We can't control it, though.
So, even though I want to go skiing on December 10th, I can't call you?
Yeah, no, we can't order it up. We can only tell you what we're observers, basically.
You know, I just had such high hopes.
Yeah.
But I guess it's not to be.
Yeah.
Walt, I know you've worked in the Arctic as well, and now it appears that you're tracking the Antarctic. What kind of projects are you working on yourself for the NSIDC?
Well, several projects. Tracking the ice cover and looking at the implications, particularly as they happen through the summer and through the winter, and also working with some of the modelers to look at what we can expect to happen in the future and improving our ability to predict what's going to happen on scales, for weeks or months and even, decades down the road in terms of helping people, as the Arctic ice cover is decreasing, more and more people are interested in going up there and various, shipping and so forth. And so there's an interest in getting better at doing that. At predicting the ice cover in that area, and then also predicting kind of the long-term changes that we might expect to see in the coming decades. So those are a couple of the big projects that I'm involved with.
We've been speaking with Walt Meyer. He's a research scientist at the National Snow and Ice Data Center in Boulder, Colorado. Walt, I want to thank you so much for giving us your time on a Friday evening, and maybe I'll forget that you can't control anything, and I'll buzz you later on when I have a specific need.
Okay. Well, if you get what you want, then we'll take credit for it. But
sounds
if you don't,
good.
that's not our fault.
Okay. Thanks, Walt.
All right. You're welcome.